Russ Mattson is on the phone with me. Russ is a professional engineer who lives right in Two Harbors and has long been studying issues around energy, storage, the green economy. I actually know Russ from our volunteer work together with the Citizens Climate Lobby. So thank you so much, Russ, for being here this morning.
Well, thank you.
It is a pleasure to have you. I feel like you're just an absolute wealth of thoughtful information in a world where there is a lot of information out there. So hopefully you can help us distill this a little bit. Let's just start with, what is your profession? How long have you been working on and thinking about things like energy storage?
Well, I have over 30 years of experience in the electric power industry, including working for consultants, electric utility, and presently an equipment manufacturer. I've worked on projects as varied as a solar array in Chile, wind farms, wind farms in North Dakota, Minnesota, and Wisconsin, and hydroelectric plants in Minnesota. And one interesting, very interesting project, I just worked for the critical asset assessment for the substation serving the Johnson Space Control Center in Houston.
Whoa. And what did that mean? That meant that you were just one of the people working, crunching the numbers and making it happen?
No. I was the person that determined what the criteria was, that you how do you examine them? Okay. What criteria do you use?
Huh.
So I set the criteria, and then we use that there and elsewhere, like at City of Burbank and at Minnesota Power.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Wonderful.
And then, the company I presently work for part-time was in the energy storage business, but exited about 2 years ago. The competition, people put the lithium-ion batteries in storage units, and they couldn't compete on the low end, so they got out. But I worked in all areas of renewables, hydro, wind, solar, and, you know, the battery units. And presently, I've been researching and writing about the activity, policy, writing position papers for renewables and energy storage. And I volunteer for CCL, an environmental advocacy group.
Yeah, so I think you're maybe one of the most knowledgeable volunteers there ever were, because it's sort of like you can envision what needs to happen here in a really basic way. And I think we should start with energy storage, because you were the one that brought to my attention, like, this is one of the key issues of a green energy economy is energy storage. And it seems to be a rising topic. A lot more people seem to understand how key this is and also how fast it's changing. But so just tell us a little bit about why it's so important and what's happening.
Katja, it's very important. Energy storage is critical in our transition to renewables. As you know, both wind and solar are intermittent, and to supply energy, if you want energy 24/7, storage must be in place.
Right.
And it will be even more important as we decarbonize. Just to give you some stats here, there's many studies by major universities and national labs that publish papers on the need for energy storage and progress in the area. As a matter of fact, it's one of the most active areas of research in the world.
Huh.
In 2019, there were over 20,000 peer-reviewed technical papers published in this area.
Yeah.
So it's pretty active.
Yeah. And were those many duplicates, or is this like an infinite number of ideas?
Well, some of it's new, and to be honest, some of them don't cover very much.
Yeah.
But talking about energy storage, today renewables account for about 20% of electric production. And that includes all renewables, hydro, wind, biomass, geothermal.
Right.
But only 9% of that is wind and solar.
Right.
And, yeah.
It seems like we hear a lot about wind and solar, but that's not necessarily, I mean, I think what you're saying is there's a lot more to it than just wind and solar.
Right, right. But going forward, I just looked up a study from Lawrence Livermore Lab, and they're talking, they were saying how many projects are in what's called the queue to be built in the next few years. And it's unbelievable. There's as much projects in the queue for renewables, wind and solar, as there is installed energy today. Yeah, not, they won't all get built, obviously. But
yeah,
there's many, many predictions. There's going to be 40 45% renewables by 2050, and most of this will come from wind and solar.
Okay. And it will need to be stored. So give us a snapshot of a couple technologies that you see are very promising, because obviously we will need to upgrade our battery storage.
Yeah, this gets a little involved, but I'll give you a rundown of kind of what kinds of storage there are in the United States today and what the most promising technologies are. Actually, this may come as a surprise to many, but the largest source of energy storage in the United States today is pumped hydro.
Okay. Meaning water and dams.
Right. And there's an excellent example. I don't know if many people have traveled that way along Lake Michigan. There's one in Ludington, one of the largest ones in the United States is in Ludington, Michigan.
Really?
They pump water from Lake Michigan up into this man-made lake, and then when the energy is needed, it goes back into Lake Michigan.
Huh. Is this efficient use of clean energy, in your opinion? Like, is this a really good thing for us, or are we moving beyond that?
We're moving beyond that. It's very limited. It isn't the most efficient. It's limited by geography, geology, and water resources. You have to have a water resource. They have Lake Michigan, you know.
Right.
And then you're building this large impoundment, and so it has severe drawbacks. And then the next one that people talk about today is lithium ions and lithium ion battery chemistry.
Right. Tell us a little bit about that. I mean, I think probably more people have heard of this in the last year than in all of my lifetime up to this point.
Right. That's what most of the action is today. Like I said, that's what my company was in. But it has some severe limitations. The biggest is sourcing materials. There's the lithium, and then the anodes and the cathodic metal frequently are what you call rare earth metals. And none of these metals, well, I won't say none of them, nearly very few of them, if any, are sourced in the United States or from around the world. And many of these source countries have human rights violations or are adversary countries. You know, Russia and China are large producers of these materials. And the other problem with lithium batteries is they have some severe cycling and lifespan issues. The usual discharge time, the batteries we made and the batteries people make today, lithium ion, have a discharge time of 2 hours, and their lifespan is only 10 years maximum.
Okay. So we need batteries that last longer and that discharge for much, much longer.
Right. In addition, there are some of the materials that are used. There's many different variations of lithium ion batteries, you know, but some are toxic. The cobalt is used in some, and arsenic in a few. And then there's a recycling issue. There are no operating lithium recycling facilities in the United States today, although are elsewhere throughout the world.
So do you think the answer is to better use the lithium we have, or are you confident that we're moving beyond lithium? And if so, to where?
Well, we have to move beyond lithium. And there's some more, you know, lithium just doesn't work because of the discharge cycle. It means that you'd need multiple sets of batteries for this 24/7 power supply.
Right.
So more lithium. We can recycle lithium, and there's papers written on recycling lithium and obtaining lithium from elsewhere. There's other types of batteries that have longer discharge, better lifetimes. One of them is a flow battery, and these basically have an electrolyte where they pump it from the anode to the cathode, and there's a few of these around. They're a little more complicated. There's pumps in them.
Yeah.
So,
and are those using precious and or difficult minerals to get as well?
One of them is a sodium sulfur, and it has one drawback. It has to be at 450 degrees Fahrenheit to work. So that's a problem. That's an issue.
Yeah, that seems like an issue.
And then actually, I think the second largest supply of renewable energy storage is compressed gas, which is used. There is some installations in the United States, I think one's in Alabama, where they compress gas, air, carbon dioxide, and it's injected into an underground storage area of geology or a tank. And then when the energy is needed, it's released, it expands and drives the generator to power production.
And is that not the same as releasing carbon dioxide into the air?
That's a good question. Some of it, I do not know the details of that.
Okay.
I don't know what they do to the released gas, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, yeah.
But there are plants that do that. They pump the gas into the ground and release it through a turbine. I would assume, I can't verify, I have not researched that method. Then there's also mechanical storage, but that's not really very practical. And actually, there are also, you just have weights and you release the weights, and there's also flywheels. As a matter of fact, flywheels are used for spacecraft.
Huh.
Yeah, it's not very practical.
Yeah. Now, Russ, you've talked with me before about what you see as potential, particularly in northeast Minnesota, both for the iron, some kind of iron battery, but also for using old mines as storage. Do you want to, can you elaborate on that just a little bit?
Right. There are versions of what's called iron-based batteries. Well, first of all, I recently worked on a paper by a university that is plans to use, or has a paper, technical, very extensive technical paper, of using underground mines for energy storage, moving the water up and down in an underground mine. That's one by Michigan Tech. The University of Minnesota has also written several papers about storing energy just by elevation difference in the mines and the pits.
Huh.
And my understanding is they are going to try a pilot project in Michigan, pumping the water up and down, and it's for a city municipal, and it actually makes money for the city. It's actually profitable. It's in an old abandoned underground iron mine, and they can use that. It's like pumped hydro in a sense, only you don't have to build anything. Everything's already there, been built for you.
Huh.
Yeah, but the most promising technology is these potential for iron.
Yeah, tell us about that a little bit, because obviously iron mining has a long history in our area.
Right. Several designs. It's been around for a long time. It's nothing new, but the reason there wasn't this need before, but it has some big advantages over lithium. It has the discharge cycle can be from 12 hours to a week, and they have potentially on almost an infinite life cycle, and they're scalable. You can, you know, usually like the lithium ion batteries we worked on, these were 2 megawatt storage, and it was what you could fit in a container, and they could stack. But there is limits to how big you could make them. There's other issues as far as safety, as far as the lithium battery. So they're very restricted. You don't have any of those restrictions with iron. In addition, iron is the fourth most common element on Earth, and it's here. So
yeah.
It's a tremendous advantage.
So what's stopping it? It seems like a no-brainer.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, these iron batteries are already being manufactured by, there's a couple different versions. One is already being manufactured by a company in Oregon called ESS, and they've supplied the batteries already to solar installations in California and Texas, and they have a huge order for Spain.
Huh.
That's a 12-hour discharge. And then there's another startup company which has a much longer duration. They claim 1 week, and they have sold 2 installations already. They aren't installed yet. It's a company from Massachusetts called Form Energy. They have a signed contract with Great River Energy, a signed contract with Georgia Power. And this type of battery design has the potential to be a game changer for renewables because of its performance, lifespan, discharge time, the cost. You can almost make them as large as you want.
Wow. So, Russ, if you had all the decision makers of Northern Minnesota listening to you, like how would you encapsulate what you think is the dream or the potential for what we, what would our role be up here?
Well, you know, the, I think we've learned now that supply chain is a very critical thing.
Right.
With getting ports being blocked and ships stuck in the Suez and things like that. So the supply chain for energy storage could almost be a closed loop system. It could be, much of it could be located right here. We have the iron deposits. We mine the iron. It could be processed here. The product that is used for the batteries could be manufactured right here. And the batteries themselves could be made right here.
Yeah.
The thing is, I have to emphasize this. There's so much energy storage needed that you can't be making these in just one plant. That's going down this long path again, because then you're subject to all kinds of disturbances, weather and whatever.
Yeah.
Where there's going to have to be multiple plants built for energy storage to build these batteries. And one would logically be here in northern Minnesota, because this is where the iron is, and we're a few steps away from closing the loop right here.
Hmm. And are you in the know enough to know if there's awareness of this and steps to take? I mean, it seems like, you know, the endless jobs debate could get such a huge boost from this.
Well, I've worked with another volunteer on this. He's been more successful. Mike has been more successful than me in contacting people. But yes, the University of Minnesota is working on this, and I imagine there's things gone behind closed doors we don't know about. But yes, people are aware at the research and university level about this, and we obviously know about this, and we've contacted every, you know, myself, Mike mostly, he's tireless in this area, contacted everybody we know.
Yeah.
And then we're not done.
Right. Right. Well, it's really fun to talk about something that is potentially very much a win-win. It seems like for natural resources, for politics, for, you know, everyone's interests can be served. It almost seems like so. I'm so glad you're here with us today to just bring this up and just to really heighten awareness about the whole energy storage issue and how central that is to moving to renewables. So thank you so much, Russ. Is there anything that I forgot to ask or you want to mention before we sign out?
Yeah, I'd like to, one other thing, I'd like to say that this is an industry. People need power 24/7 to power their everyday lives. So this industry would be needed today, 10 years from now, and 100 years from now.
Yeah.
You know, it wouldn't see the oscillations that normal mining would see.
This
would be go on, like I say, 10 years from now, 100 years from now. And we need to inform our political decision makers about this.
It's not, you're talking about something wholly different than boom and bust.
Right. This is, it's probably going forward the most critical industry that I can think of.
Wow. Well, let's end it on that note. Thank you so much, Russ. I'm speaking with Russ Mattson, a professional engineer who lives right in Two Harbors. And I think there's really endless things to talk about with this. We haven't even started getting into the space issue, but maybe I'll have you on again. Thank you again, Russ.
Thank you.
All right. You take care. That was Russ Mattson. He is a professional engineer in Two Harbors, speaking to KTWH.